centre. Oh, this could be an opening. The man didn't want to have the opening. It's Norman Shetland. That is the moment. The moment of madness.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to Hearts and Sleeves podcast, a podcast that is all about Heart of Midlothian Football Club, its fans, and the ups and downs we experience on the way, both on and off the pitch.
Right, so this week we are joined by Trunter and Adam. John will be winding his merry way to us at some point, hopefully in time for his usual loan watch and so forth. I've just got in front of me the league table, and I think, you know, there's going to be a bit of maybe a slight bit of negativity and analysing bits that have gone wrong, but also look at what's gone right. Just reminding you all, played 14, won 9, drawn 4, lost 1. We've scored the most goals, and aside from Celtic, we've conceded the least alongside Rangers. So things are going really well, generally speaking. We're kind of having a bit of a lull. I wouldn't say it's a rough patch even. I just think it's been a bit of a lull. We'll go into that, look at it, and try and discuss what we think could be improved going ahead and what we need to consider going into a week which is going to see us back home at Tynecastle. It feels like it's been a while. Maybe because I wasn't at the Dundee United game, but it feels like it's been a while since we were at Tynecastle. And then, of course, the big one, away to Parkhead at the weekend. Adam, how are you doing? It's been a busy week for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I went to the Motherwell game with John and his friend, and also Chris, the Motherwell fan from last week. We went to the pub before the game, so it was actually quite nice going to a match with an opposition fan and sort of chatting about Motherwell as well. Just it was quite a nice sort of getting a perspective on it before the match, and we had a bit of a disaster on the way home, though, because the train got cancelled from Bowers Hill, and we ended up getting a taxi from Bowers Hill to Edinburgh. But apart from that, it was a decent day.
Trunter, you've had a rough couple of weeks. We've kind of covered this a wee bit. You've let us know that you've been going through some tough times lately. Do you want to talk about a bit of that before we talk about Hearts?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for checking in. There's a few things that circumstances. I'll probably not really go into them. It's a bit. It's just things involving a few people in my life, and it's just kind of all coming. It seems everything's kind of coming in a one-er at the moment. So it's been a really draining month, or maybe 2 months. A lot of things are looking better than they were. Some things are not great, but it's been quite difficult to sort of catch myself. Obviously everyone's got all these things in their lives, you know, that's what life is. It's never going to be all plain sailing. But usually I can sort of as I catch myself and, you know, keep on keeping on, think, what stood out for me the last sort of maybe month or so was, I wasn't really able to do that. I think the depression side of things that I've kind of had quite a good hold off for a long time, I couldn't quite get on top of it, and it was all these things. I felt more than than I might have previously done. And I think that was where I was really struggling. So it was kind of talking to people about things, working on the things that kind of like I'd identified that had not been great. I was struggling to do that, and it became a bit like overwhelming. So that was where I kind of like struggled this month. I realized that's a bit of a massive blether there, but I feel I'm kind of getting more on top of things. There's my dad's not been very well recently. I think that's probably the biggest one for me that I've been dealing with. And for a wee while there, I'd kind of just not dealt with the way I was feeling. I probably should have communicated better. So I'm gonna kind of like work on that. But as of right now, feeling a lot better. So thank you for asking me, and I apologize for the massive ramble there. I don't think it was particularly caring, but that's how it be sometimes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, thank you for letting us in on what's been going on. And you know, it's good to hear that things are certainly you're feeling a bit better within yourself, and I'm really sorry about your dad.
He's fine. Honestly, he's not fine, but he's a bit like me. He's he keeps it all to himself, and then you find out all the detail of what's going on all in the oneer, and it's just bloody hell. You should have talked.
So. Yeah. Like father, like son in that regard.
Yeah, right.
So what is it that you think helped you? Say if someone's listening to this and they're going through a really shit time, what would you say to them? What is a part that you felt helped you starting to sort of get on the road to feeling a bit better?
I think it was the first time I opened up to, I've talked to my girlfriend as well. I think the trick is knowing when you've kind of almost had enough. I think we're all, and particularly as like, you know, men, and we're pretty much middle aged now, aren't we? It's identifying that period where you really, you just had your head down, you're grinding away, and you're kind of taking the hits nonstop and just sort of sucking it up. I think it's really important to let yourself identify when you've kind of had too much, when you are struggling, and just kind of talk to someone, or just let someone know that you're feeling overwhelmed, that you're unhappy. I don't know what the key is to kind of like identifying when you're there, but I ended up I just broke down sobbing like a few days ago, and it almost came out of nowhere. Nothing had triggered that. It was like a day off from work, and I was doing the dishes, and I almost hit the deck sobbing. And I was so confused. But I mean, I sat down and I just kind of like, you know, I picked up my dog Archie and I just cuddled him, and I thought, what's happened to put me here? And I just thought over the last sort of like month or two, and I actually started writing stuff down. So I wrote it in, I've got a jotter that I use for both this podcast and my punk band for my lyrics. And I just took a couple of pages and I just wrote all the stuff down that I felt I couldn't quite deal with. And I had a wee sort of like spider diagram of what what was hurting me, why, and kind of like what I could do,
yeah,
like myself, to sort of deal with that. So, like, you know, one of the things was like, you know, feeling uncomfortable about it, like myself, was like, okay, I'm going to start running. So mm-hmm. I've been going for like a couple of runs. One of them was like a relationship with someone, and then it was talk to this person. One of the things was work and what I was upset about, mm-hmm. and who I needed to talk to, and what I thought I could do about it. And I was holding my dog the whole time. My wee Archie, he was he's a wee rock, but yeah. And I've felt a lot better since then, because I've kind of written things down and tried to sort of made sense of things in my head, and I hadn't done that for quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it had just been kind of. I'd just been feeling it without dealing with anything. So that helped me a lot. Just sort of identifying why I was so sad.
I think you've touched on a couple of really important points there. I mean, first of all, you know, obviously a big thing is speaking to your partner, and I think one of these issues I always have is I forget people care, right? You know, you talk about things, you're worried about how people are going to feel, how people are going to react. At the end of the day, most people in your life, in fact almost everyone, if not everyone in your life that you want in your life, cares about you. So if you're going to offload about something, is going to land on someone that wants to hear it, you know? And I think that's one thing us guys need to get our head around and just accept that people do care about us. The other thing I think was really, you know, this is something I don't do, and I think it's such a fantastic point, or a really good method to address when you just feel overwhelmed and you're not quite sure about what's getting you down. Just writing everything down, just every little thought that's coming to you, because you know we're not able to address everything all at one time, but that's great that you made the list. You're able to sort of check off each one as you go along, and you know you can address one thing at a time, because no one's going to be able to address every little issue in their life all at one time. But what we can do is make sure that we're able to get everything out there that's in your head and write it down. And just accept that you won't be able to address it all at one time, but you've sounded like you've done an amazing job at just doing, okay, this is something I feel down about, I'm going to address that.
I'm really glad that Trunter can kind of come on here and talk about it. And it's kind of echoes how I felt since I met Jamie, which is, you know, the way that Jamie and Trunter can kind of openly talk about mental health is almost helping me every time I hear both of you speak about it. Because even though I have spoken to people about things in the past, I definitely still feel like there's times when I feel like if I tell anyone about things I'm struggling with, I still feel like I'm kind of putting a burden on those people, which is funny because like in my job, you know, a lot of parts of my job, you know, relates to people talking about their mental health, and when it's someone else talking about it, you know, there's no judgment. I feel like I'm really glad they're telling me, or even like friends or whatever. But yeah, I still struggle with the whole aspect of being able to talk about stuff openly and expecting that people will want to hear it and will kind of respond positively. So I think every time you and Trunter talk about it, it kind of helps me. And the podcast itself is actually helping me. I mean, I'm still, like I said, I think a couple of weeks ago, you know, the last couple of weeks I've had to kind of almost force myself onto the podcast, which is funny because I actually enjoy the podcast a lot. But I think it being on a Monday, you know, kind of forcing myself to come on and talk, it definitely helps me, because when I'm not feeling great, I tend to kind of isolate myself a bit. So kind of coming onto the podcast and talking to you guys certainly always gives me like a big boost at the start of the week. I'm obviously sorry Trunter has been struggling, but I'm really glad that he can come on here and he can kind of share stuff with us, because I think that's really important that he has a platform to do that on here and obviously in his own life as well.
there's a huge irony, and I don't know if we all think about it a lot, but particularly like the work that you guys do, and even my job. So I run a cafe, and you know, I sort of have to make sure that, like, you know, all the customer, like, they have a lovely time and check. I've got a lot of friends through that, and so much of, like, you know, like what I do is making sure that people are happy, and I've got there, you know, there's a lot of like older people that come in through the week, and I see them sort of like 4 or 5 times a week, and, you know, oh, how you doing? Like, I look after quite a lot of people's dogs through this as well. And so I understand that looking after people, checking in on people, and making sure that people are happy and that they're okay and stuff. And then the irony is that I don't necessarily do that with myself. And I think you guys are the same. You guys, you care so much for other people, and a lot of the work that you do revolves around that. And it's so easy to overlook yourselves.
Absolutely. That's the curse of it sometimes when you're in roles or positions where you're having to, you know, care for others, look out for others. I think, you know, parents can sometimes feel like this as well. Anyone in any kind of caring role, be it within a family or within their line of work, can often find themselves burning out just from caring for the others, but at the price of themselves, quite honestly.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, a great point, a fantastic point. Yeah. And thank you both for, you know, your kind words, and I'm really glad we've got the space to talk about these things. And if there's people listening to this that it resonates with, or they want to talk about anything that's going on in their life, or they want to come on and talk about it, or write an email about any issues they're facing, either on or off the pitch, then do email us, heartsonsleevespodcast@outlook.com. Now, we're going to go from talking about depression to this thing that I've written up about hearts called Top 5 Reasons Hearts Aren't Doing Well at the Moment. So it's a really uplifting podcast today. But I'm hoping that by talking about the issues that we're facing within ourselves and within hearts, we will find solutions and things to be happy about as well and look forward to. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, man.
So, yes, I wrote down, as I say, on the train today to work and on the way back, a kind of main key factors that I think are playing a part in why things aren't quite clicking at the moment. And that's not to say these things can't be resolved. And like I say, I think we can sort of look at how we all think they will be, but hopefully it'll shine a light on why, yeah, we're not quite getting the rub of the green results-wise lately. I mean, feel free to add to this list of 5 as well, but what I'll do is I'll go through them first of all, and then we can go through each one at a time and perhaps talk about the Motherwell game and other results that have played a part in this as well. So the top five main issues I felt were form of key players in particular. So Braga, Kizaridis, Milne and Finlay were the four that really jumped out at me, whose form seemed to have dipped. Injuries, we're going to obviously look at Ajou. Three separate hamstring injuries now. Look, obviously he's not really played a part in the team, but I think that's something we should talk about as well. Just our most expensive ever signing. It's kind of a bit concerning that he's managed to get three separate hamstring injuries. It's just bizarre. But also the fact that other players, key players, Beningwe in particular, and just other players being out, such as Shankland and Halkett in the Aberdeen game, for example, have played a part. Lineups, players being played out of positions, and sometimes pretty odd or really late substitutions. Tough run of fixtures. There's no doubt about it. This has actually been a pretty, you know, challenging set of games that we've had to face. And also last, I think, actually probably one of the most important ones for me, the will to win. I think, you know, you reflect on the Motherwell game compared to even the St Mirren one, which we ended up drawing, but we were just going for it at the end. And if, yeah, you know, if you said, if you had to put your mortgage on a team that would go out and win it for the St Mirren one, you would have put Hearts. And for the Motherwell one, it's quite the opposite. It's kind of balls to the wall kind of thing for Hearts, with Motherwell knocking on the door. So they're the sort of key five ones, and feel free to add, but I think we should just go through each one and discuss them a wee bit. So starting from the top then, the form of our current players, and, you know, feel free to reflect on the Motherwell game as well as recent ones, other recent ones. What are your thoughts on current players' form then, and is there any that's sticking out for you, either positively or negatively?
That's a tough one. I would say there's the element of form. There's also the element of us being, you know, 14 games into the season. So guys like Kizaridis and Braga were a bit of a surprise package, a bit of an unknown quantity when they signed for us. Now, obviously, we're playing each team a second time. I feel like, you know, there's going to be elements of us being found out a little bit, of teams knowing how to deal with our top players. So I almost feel like it's a combination of them no longer being completely new, unknown players. And also just, you know, we're going to naturally dip a little bit. You know, guys like Braga and Kizaridis are not going to be amazing every single week. So I feel like it's kind of a combination there.
What about yourself, Trunter?
Man, I don't know. I think there was so much excitement when we started off, and everyone was playing so well. Everyone was playing out of their skins. It's just been a bit like of a reality check with everyone, really. We had such a set, like, when McInnes didn't change the lineup as well, so we were so set with this lineup that was delivering as well. I think Benny being injured is almost like the catalyst for the poor run. It's like the beating heart of the team, like the motor, the engine. You take that out, it's crazy to think that it can be so fragile that you take kind of one thing out of 11 people playing football and everything changes. But I think that's kind of where we are. Because I don't know who's going to step up to kind of change things. There is something, like you were talking about, that like desire to win, that kind of like that hard-edged mentality. And I do feel it's just kind of gone a little bit. I, yeah. And that's what worries me.
I think a big issue was that, sure, Benny got injured, but it happened exactly the same time, really, as well. One of the times that Joe was injured before the Aberdeen game, we kind of said he was planning for Joe to basically be in that position that Benny was. Obviously, slightly different player, but he's working on a formation or a plan that really involved him, and then he was no longer part of that.
He was never part of that plan. He wasn't playing. Which that's the thing. Me. We had such, when we were doing so well, it had nothing to do with Ajou. Like, nothing to do with him at all.
Yeah.
So it's not like we've taken him out of the equation.
Yeah. And what I'm kind of meaning, though, is that Benny was injured, but it's kind of doubled. The effect's kind of doubled by the fact McInnes had this plan for Ajou to come in place of Benny after he got injured, but then Ajou himself got injured, so that kind of, he then had to work with, I presume, plan C, which was Magnussen in midfield. But you're right, to me, you know, it kind of almost felt like a bit of a luxury signing with Ajou, because Benny was just doing so well in there.
Yeah.
As you say, a total, really kind of almost understated in a way, because I think, you know, you look at Cammy, he's just such an easy player to look at and think and appreciate just how much he's giving, how much he's doing. Whereas Benny, he's doing all the, you know, kind of the dirty work. And he's actually looking like he might try and score. I think especially for you, quite quickly, Trunter, just to try and get your 2-goal for the league prediction, which is looking heavily in doubt now.
Never in doubt, mate.
Coming back a wee bit to what you said, Adam, as well, I think you made a really interesting point, that people are figuring out, or these are no players are no longer unknown entities. You know, there's plenty of times where you'll see two players on Braga, or, you know, people shutting down in different ways Kizaridis. They understand what his plan is. Quite often his plan is to cut inside. Some people can handle that. Some teams can handle that better than others. So I think that plays its part as well. Finlay and Milne, they're two interesting ones for me. Finlay, I felt, had a poor game against Motherwell and looked at fault for what was very close to being a Motherwell goal. Any sort of reasoning we can think for that? You know, you can. I know McInnes said he didn't feature as highly on the analytics as some other options he had, but we know just how good a player is. Is it just kind of coincidence then that he's maybe not playing as well as he was in the first few games? Thoughts?
We're still not conceding many goals.
Mm.
So despite the kind of poor run, relatively speaking, we've only conceded 2 goals in 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
I do think we look weaker defensively, but we're not suddenly, you know, we're not suddenly collapsing and getting
destroyed
by teams. So I think Finlay didn't do well against Motherwell, and I just wouldn't say it's totally down to our defence that we're struggling to pick up wins at the moment. I think, yeah, we still kept a clean sheet. We still are conceding very few goals. So I'm not overly worried about Finlay at the moment, even if he's not doing quite as well as he did before.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you guys think would be the centre-back partnership at the start of the year, like start of the season even? Because I remember, like, I was thinking McCart and Kent. Like, at one point, I thought I was quite excited about that. And clearly that's not the, neither have really been trusted, but... And I guess I just assumed that Houkes would be perma-crocked as well.
Yeah, my thinking, I thought Finlay would be one of them, just because McInnes obviously headhunted him and wanted him in. So I assumed he would definitely be playing a part. Yeah, I didn't expect Houkes to do quite as well as he's doing. I think probably just from what McInnes was saying, more than anything else. I thought McCart would probably be partnering.
Yeah, me too, man.
Finlay. But hey, I mean, we've still not really seen a huge amount of McCart, have we?
No, not at all.
Nah, he's barely had an appearance.
By the way, Hulk's for Scotland. I can't believe he's not in the Scotland lineup.
Well, I can.
I mean, Clark doesn't. Exactly. Yeah. Look how long it took for Shanklin to get any kind of meaningful minutes.
Yeah.
So I don't think Clark does it too much on merit. It's more about guys that he knows and trusts. Otherwise, I think Halkett would be in with a good shout.
Grant Hanley instead of Halkett is just hilarious.
Even Suter. I mean, Suter's not exactly brilliant now, is he?
No, especially these days.
Never heard of him. I don't know who that is. That was, I remember, Jamie, what game was it we went to? So Suter was leaving at the end of the season and we were at Tynecastle together. And Jamie legit made me uncomfortable by just fucking booing Suter. I was like, oh, come on, man. You know, I was being all grown up and stuff. And Jamie's like, fuck off!
Fucking boo!
Oh, God.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it. Right, injuries then. Obviously, the big one is Nieuwenhof. I mean, I don't know how we're managing to do anything without him, you know?
I actually like him, to be honest. I rated him, but he's obviously... I don't expect to ever see him play for us again now.
No.
I mean, he seems to just be out constantly. Every time he's back, he's got another injury, so... Not sure we'll ever see him again. Am I responding way too seriously to the Nieuwenhof?
That's all right.
He's a great guy.
I should have gone for Pollock instead, but then again, he's also quite promising.
Oh, hero. So,
well, you know what? Nieuwenhof looked incredible against Sunderland. So, but yeah, he's quite clearly never going to play another minute for us. Okay, but yeah, the other injuries, I mean, to be honest, we've not really had. I mean, Beningame is just far and away, obviously, the big one. And I kind of touched on it there, that Ajoe was in McInnes's plans. But I think other than that, it's just the fact it's in such an important part of the team that we had the pairing of injuries. Is it something we'll look at in the January window then?
Surely, because look at Ajoe, right? There's no one else in the squad that is in even that really position, I don't think.
Yeah, so I'm still not sure what to make of Magnussen, because you were saying, Adam, that, was it Robbo?
Yeah.
Adam as kind of like a box-to-box type. I don't know if McInnes really knows how best to play him at the moment.
If Robbo had him kind of top of the analytics behind Ajoe, basically, and said he was the absolute best, one of the best players we had. He's been very inconsistent, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
We had like 3 starts in the whole season. So he's another one of the signings that has mainly come off the bench. So it still feels hard to judge him, but I do think he's been pretty inconsistent.
I don't want to sound like a broken record as well, but that time that Adam and I were at St. Mirren, and I was just again, it was just like a halftime training thing, and I just didn't fucking like the look of him. I know the guest that we had on after that was saying that he'd heard loads of like really positive stuff about Magnussen. Mm-hmm. There was just something, it was almost like his, just the way that he almost stood and passed the football. It's so weird because I'm not like this, but it just pissed me off. I just thought, he just didn't look a player to me. And I'm so happy to be proved wrong, but I just haven't seen anything that would suggest, and that fucking header the other week, Jesus Christ. I score that 9 times out of 10, and I'm a fat 41-year-old, right? Like, oh God, I've got a least favorite player. That's it's so unfair, but you know, you just get a vibe about someone. You see the way that they move and that they play on a football pitch, and it just doesn't sit well. That's where I'm at with Magnussen. I don't think he's the answer to any question.
I want us to come back to this in 2 seconds, because I want to talk about how he fits into the lineup and so forth. I'm just going to, because we touched on, like, obviously we're talking some of the obvious places we're talking about getting people in the January window. We know we're getting a winger in Islam Chesnikov.
We know. Oh, fucking, are we?
Yes, we are. That's now been confirmed that he'll be joining us. I think fifteenth of this month.
Can we just all agree that's the most irritating fucking transfer for Hearts ever? Like, Jesus Christ!
Who's the one that had all the sort of work permits? Was it Ortestis? I'm not going to even attempt. I mean, I feel his first name, so I'm not going to be able to attempt to say him. But Keogh.
Yeah, Keogh. Sure, I remember him.
Yeah, he had, like, I'm sure he had a proper protracted work permit issue. I mean, I remember there was obviously Kabori had issues, but I mean, I'm sure Keogh's went on for ages, and then he ended up being absolutely fucking gash, and now he's at some diddy C team in Germany. So I hope it's not going to be another circumstance like that. Also, by the way, whilst we're on Chesnikov, our next quiz name could be Quizlam Chesnikov.
Oh, well played. But again, it'll probably get absolutely no appreciation.
Exactly.
I like it.
But still, but that's the main thing. So long as we laugh. So long as we've had our fun.
I've had my fun and that's all that matters.
I just Googled Hearts work permit issues and Salazar came up. So that's not a good omen ever.
Jeez, we collect them, don't we? Collect them alongside hamstring issue players.
Fucking hell, I bet you Chesnikov's absolutely shit when we get
He's going to be a baller.
It always worries me when players are built up to this level.
This is Hearts. That's what we do. We spend... All of our record signings have been absolute munters for us. It's not like we're just being like, you know, like, oh, fucking, it might not happen. It's like we've got a proven track record of absolute dog shit when we spend money.
Shankland, he must have like been close to like maybe like our second or third biggest signing money.
Track my statement.
Like, how much is he coming for? It must have been over 500 or something around that. And it's not often we pay around that. It's not often we pay. I mean, we're paying less than that for Chesnikov, to be fair.
Yeah, true.
Also, do you know, do you see what team he's coming in from?
No.
It's called Tobol Kosteny, which is brilliant because he didn't cost anything for us.
How long have you had that one up your sleeve? That's nuts.
I was reading the Barry Anderson article today in a screenshot. I thought, oh, there's a good dad joke to get them all with.
Good man. That's anyway, why you had kids, so you can drop these dad jokes.
Exactly. They've got to have some use, right? No, I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding.
I've been friends with you since you were about 21 years old, and you've always been a dad joke guy, even when you were a baby. So it's good to see them coming into like actual like fitting settings.
I'll take that as a compliment, thank you. Anyway, we digress. The midfield area, right? So I'm just looking at all our midfielders that we've got at the moment. Some of these might go in January for all we know, but I'd be interested to know your thoughts then. So Benny, presumably he'll be back come January, right? We're hoping he will be. Neuenhoff, total write-off. Ajoe, hopefully back again for January. Kami, hopefully new contract by January. Spittle, he'll still be kicking about, I'm sure. Magnussen, we'll come back to him in a wee bit. Khartoum, well, he came onto the bench.
On the bench, a first time in about a few months, actually.
Yeah. And then obviously Pollock as well. I think that's kind of your lot. I mean, you've got people like, you know, obviously people on the wing and playing off to the right and so forth. But they're your kind of main ones you'd expect to see in the middle there. I mean, if you boil it down to the ones you think will really have a realistic chance of being in the starting lineup, Benny, Ajoe, Devlin, Magnussen. I mean, Spittle, I don't know, an absolute push. But I guess it gives you four in there.
I'll take Spittle over Magnussen any day. Like, I still think there's a player in Spittle. I don't think he's settled in the team. I don't think he's found his position. Well, I mean, he has obviously found his position. But I don't think we've found his position where that works.
And I think that's a good way to sort of go on to how does he fit in here? First of all, Adam, do you think we need someone else in midfield?
I think we, longer term, we need someone. Mm. I can't see Spittle staying at us long term. Khartoum will be away. I can't see it being top of the list of positions we look at in January, though.
Mm.
Because obviously Benny and Azu start to come back. Once they're back, you've got them and Devlin and Magnussen. I'd like to see someone else, but I don't think it's something that we'll prioritise in January.
Fair enough. Yeah. I suppose I should. No, I think just, I'm with you on that, but I think there's a couple of things, right? So Azu has to work. There's kind of no two ways about it. He's a record signing. We've not had any evidence one way or the other to see whether he will fit in or he won't. There's just too little to go on. There's been brief appearances. He's had moments where he's looked pretty good, moments where he didn't know what he was doing, clearly. But that's kind of because he came at a time when the whole team looked a bit lost. So we do need to find, when he's back and injury free, he needs to find a way into this team by hook or by crook. Magnussen, that is one of I'm pretty sure that was one of McInnes's choices, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So again, I'm pretty sure, and as you say, the analytics show that he's meant to be a real class act.
But the eyes don't agree with that.
Yep. Wait, just to clarify, would you say you're a fan of Magnussen or kind of not that fussed about him, would you say?
Got his name on the back of my kit. Yeah.
Again, I think McInnes is someone Magnussen is someone that McInnes will definitely want to work. But he just, as far as I'm aware, I think he's supposed to be that kind of player we've all wanted. Defensive midfield who's capable of being attacking. But how does he fit in? He just doesn't. Yeah. There's not been a game where he's 100% looked like the kind of player we expect him to be, I guess.
We want that player. You need to build a football team around midfielder. You want to have a midfielder that is controlling things, that can go back, that can go forwards, and that can pass. The heart of a football team is the midfield. We do not. I mean, well, we've got Cammy and Benny, both excellent players, and both, like, you know, totally the epitome of blood doesn't show on a ruined shirt, but we need someone that's going further forward, that's productive up there, that you can build your team around. We don't have that. And that's, let's get, I Jamie, could you sign Davey Watson, please?
That would be nice. Although, he didn't get a shout under McInnes, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't. That's what, oh, Christ, I've forgotten his name, but...
Cal, was it?
Cal. That's yeah. It, Cal. Yeah. Big shout out to Cal. Yeah, because he was saying that as well. He was like, you know, I don't know if maybe McInnes doesn't value that kind of position as, like, that's what he wants. But I think that's what we need. Like, just that beating, driving heart in the midfield, someone like that.
I think what's really interesting is his personality is just, I mean, from when me and Adam met him, is just the polar opposite to Cammy. So Cammy, excited, you know, Benny as well, like, you know, very, he's chill, but like really, he's got this kind of real energy, positive energy. I'm not saying Magnussen is like downbeat or anything like that, but he's totally like beyond laid back, you know, like almost stoner dude laid back.
So he looks like that fucking Alice band in his hair suggests he would. I used to play, when I played football, I had longer hair and had an Alice band, so I shouldn't hate him for that, but I kind of do.
But yeah, his personality is just, from what I've seen, just very different to Devlin. Very different, you know that. So if you're needing someone who to galvanise, bring the whole team together, Magnussen's not that guy. And maybe that's what this team currently needs, is personalities like that in the spine, you know. And I'm not saying that won't come. Of course I'm not saying that. And, you know, there's many examples of players who are completely different. I mean, let's just go to our old pal Stephen Presley. You know, you listen to his interviews, yet anyone who's ever played with him said, what a talisman this guy is. So, yeah. Coming back again to lineup then. So, we've changed things about a little bit, but not a huge amount. The thing I find a bit odd about our team is there's been a number of occasions where it feels a bit like square pegs and round holes to an extent, you know.
Yeah.
With Milne, right, that worked. Recent games, it hasn't worked so well. The obvious one we're going to go to is McEntee, right? He, defensively, he looks sound, but there's just creativity is just not his forte. He's just not got that within him.
Well, he was a centre-back, wasn't he?
He's centre-midfield, centre-back. He's, one thing he's not, though, is a right-back. Technically he's a right-back at the moment, but he's certainly not a right-wing-back. We can all agree on that.
Yeah, for real.
But just, yeah, we've seen glimpses of Bork Revink, and, you know, he's looked pretty decent. Is McInnes being a bit too stubborn, or is he just playing players because he knows that, I don't know, looking at the Motherwell team, he knew that he would need someone really defensively minded, and that'd come at the cost of not having much creativity? I mean, look, we got, what, one shot on target, was it, against Motherwell? So I'm not saying that's all down to him, McEntee, but it certainly kind of took away one creative outlet that we potentially could have got. And again, oh, you mentioned Kurjata was injured, wasn't it?
He was ill.
Or unwell, yeah. But again, just moments like that, where's he gone? You could see he could deliver a ball, but he's just kind of gone by the wayside. So I guess what I'm asking you is, do you think McInnes sticks too rigidly to things? Does he struggle to have a plan B? Is he just like our pal from the squad, Steve Clark, just incredibly loyal? I'm putting that out there, asking all these questions. Go wild. What do you think?
mental if he is just stuck in his ways, because he's got fucking Jamestown analytics to use. I don't know.
He's embraced Jamestown analytics when he's spoken about it. Like at the event that we went to at the start of the season. I don't understand why Borchgrevink isn't getting a chance. I mean, I would have put him at right back. It does feel a little bit like he's got favoured players, McInnes, and these other guys like him and Kajota and that are barely making an appearance. But personally, I think when Borchgrevink came on, I thought he looked like he had a decent impact. And I think he's someone I'd be starting at the moment. I'd have started him against Motherwell. We're kind of persisting with playing guys out of position. Is it that McInnes just doesn't rate Borchgrevink at all? I don't know, but I'd be starting him at right back and giving that a shot, because I think he's looked like he could be decent when he's come on.
Yeah, and the other feeds into this. We've talked about this before, just substitutions that maybe... There's been times I've thought, oh, that's a bit of a strange substitution, but it kind of works. But there's been some instances lately where it's not really worked.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I mean, one key example I can think of, you listed off the amount of minutes that that Kabangu got recently. And I found that kind of took me back, just how little he was getting used. Your thoughts on that, Adam?
In terms of subs in general?
Yeah.
I feel like there's been some strange decisions. I mean, against Dundee United, it was 1-1 at half-time. We made a couple early subs there at half-time. Mm. But then you went to Aberdeen and we waited until there was about 15 minutes to play, despite the fact that we were losing. You know, and then you bought guys on about 15 minutes to play. You bought Forrest and Wilson on, which felt like really strange subs with 5 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
Even against Motherwell, it's like 20 minutes to go. I feel like, and then Kabori's coming on with 5 minutes to go. I feel like there's been a lot of late subs where they don't really have a chance to make an impact. It confuses me. Dundee United, we made such a quick, you know, the earlier in the season, we've had a few subs at half-time, but then you're also getting a lot of games recently where you're making very late subs and they're just not having much of a chance to make an impact. And then some of the choices of subs have been a bit questionable as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a concern. I think it was even at times a concern when we were winning, but we didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said in the chat, I think, you know, when we're winning, you can't just overlook everything. But when you're losing, you can't suddenly, or not losing, we're not even losing. But, you know, when we're suddenly off form, I don't think you can suddenly say McInnes is a terrible manager, everything he's doing is wrong. But, yeah, there's certainly been times with subs where you've kind of raised an eyebrow, or there's been, I don't know, there's been a few questionable starting lineups and a few questionable subs. And Kajota, Kabangu, all these guys who kind of make cameo appearances every so often. There's a sort of consistent group of players that always play, and then there's another group that barely feature, seem to come on like too late on in the match to actually make an impact. So it's certainly a concern, I would say.
I think a really odd one for me, or I think what I find confusing, concerning, call it what you will, about Wilson coming on, I kind of just, for the Aberdeen game, I just didn't really think about it, because I did find it a bit odd that he brought him on instead of Kabangu, but I thought, right, Wilson must be showing a lot in training, there must be some sort of plan behind it. But then he doesn't even make the bench for the Motherwell game. I just find that totally bizarre.
I mean, if you look, since August, Wilson's made one sub appearance.
Hmm.
And in the last few games, he's come on once as a sub, but he was not even been on the bench in any other match.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got guys like, you know, like Kajota. Kajota comes on against Hibs and sets up the goal.
Mm-hmm.
he's made two sub appearances since then. That was the start of October. So there's guys that kind of come in and then they're just gone. But
yeah,
it's quite hard to work it out.
And, you know, I do sympathise with McInnes. He's obviously balancing players that have been there either too long, players that he never really wanted, mixed in with players that he wants for a system that he clearly wants to get working and has been working. You know, let's not, you know, deny that. Obviously, we're kind of being critical because things haven't quite gone our way lately. That's what you do when you're a podcast. You need to do these things. But yeah, he has got a difficult job juggling all these things. And I am sympathetic to that, but there's just been some questions raised and we need to try and look at them, basically.
Moving who's on the bench? Who's on the bench that you would go, oh my God, he's on the bench? There's no one, I think, that we would look at the bench in Hearts team, right? And think, why is he not playing? I mean, we're talking about Kujata as well, because he put that in that beautiful cross. But there's, and again, I'm going to bang on about the midfield. There's, we talk about, you know, squad depth and stuff, but I don't think there's anyone sitting there on that bench unused that we're thinking, why not? So I don't think we'd really do have the depth. When we were doing, when we were doing great, it was that exact same starting 11. And you put in a couple of injuries, and now we are where we are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one that's kind of, I guess, the only one that really makes me think, oh, I could really see him starting more often is Kabore. I think he's shown quite a lot lately. But you're right, the depth isn't perhaps, I mean, let's go through what we had against Motherwell. So Sport Grevink, we know about that, right? Yeah. Forest. I'm glad John's not here because he'd be fuming just by his very mention. Kabangu, Khartoum made it unbelievably. Kent Magnussen was on the bench for that one, and McCart. So there is a mixture of players there that came in previously. There's very few there that Magnussen's, I think, the only one there that McInnes has chosen himself. I'm pretty sure Kabore was signed before he got a chance to get his unit. Yeah, Adam, your thoughts on that bench and subs in general?
Yeah, it's not the best working bench. Like, I wanted Borchgrevink to start, but again, we've barely seen him play. The fact that Alan Forrest is still a sub, you know, still getting appearances is a strange one after all the signings we've made. Kent's been not the player that I used to think he was. Khartoum, you know, Khartoum, McCart, these are guys that aren't playing much. It wasn't the most exciting bench at all, I would say. It's a strange one because there's times when, when you're doing well, you look at the bench and you think, oh, we're looking brilliant. And then when suddenly you don't win for a few games or however many games it's been, suddenly everything becomes a bit negative. But yeah. I don't think, it wasn't the most exciting bench at all. But I would still say some of the guys on the bench, we really haven't seen a great deal of. So it's, but yeah, it just wasn't a very inspiring bench, I would say.
Sorry, Adam. I was going to say that we have sang the praise of it compared to, for example, the 2005-2006 season. I'm not, you know, just the strength and depth we have now compared to them. So we do definitely have, you know, decent strength. But as you say, I guess there is depth there, but as you say, there's perhaps not that many that are really battering down the door to be starting.
Yeah.
Would that be fair?
I think so, yeah. Because, you know, you look at Khartoum's never going to start, Forrest is never going to start, Kabore and Magnussen are the only ones really on the bench that seem to have a shot at starting at the moment. So I think that's a fair point. I think we've got more squad, we've got more players. We just don't have, not too many of them look like they've got a realistic chance of starting in the next few weeks.
Now, the next point, and by the way, just people listening to this, John has now joined us. How are we doing, John?
I'm all right. Sorry for being so late.
And that's quite all right. You've just missed Trunter singing the praises of Magnussen.
And we were just you just missed a 5-minute segment on Alan Forrest being the answer. We don't know what the question is, actually.
Yes.
Before Jamie says that.
That feels like one of those, you know, BBC Scotland quizzes. What's it, off the ball or whatever it is? If Forrest is the answer, what is the question? That sort of thing. Right, so my next point, what I've been doing as well, John, is kind of the top five issues that we've been facing lately that's made us have, you know, a slight downturn in fortunes. Number four, then, on the list of issues that we're facing is, it's been a tough run of fixtures. There's no two ways about it. Motherwell, let's look at that one first of all. They're pretty much the most formed team outside of Rangers, maybe even. Yeah, considering Rangers only drew with Falkirk. Oh, and Celtic, of course, domestically, have been doing really well under O'Neill. But yeah, a really formed team. Aberdeen, they're a poor team, and I think we should have won that one, I think it's fair to say. Or at least got something there. But Tawdry just seems a bit of a hoodoo one. St Mirren and Dundee United are ones that kind of stick out for me more, though. Dundee United, I think, is, out of all our most recent results, that, to me, is even more disappointing than the Aberdeen one, I think.
I think Dundee United's our worst result in the week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one... You've got to be winning your home games against teams like that. That, had we beaten Dundee United, I think we feel a bit differently about the recent matches. That for me is by far the worst result because it was a home game against.
To be fair, St Mirren have only got, I think we're one of the only points they've got recently as well. Yeah. Like, I don't know if they were all right at the time, but now looking back on it, they've been on a terrible run.
They have been.
That's true, yeah, you're right, actually. God, I just looked at their fixtures in the week. They've that's their only point in the last seven games.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's only going to get harder as well for us.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We really need just to get a win, just to get things going again, because this is going to be a really tough run of fixtures. So we've got, obviously... midweek, we've got Killy, and that really, there's no two ways about it, it's a must win. You said it last week, Adam, if we don't win that one, that's when alarm bells officially start going a wee bit.
Yeah. I think in particular, if you look at the matches around the Killy game, we've had a lot of tough games. Maybe not every team has been on form, but they are tough games on paper. Killy, they've lost. I mean, they drew against Dundee United. They lost six in a row before that. This is one that we really, really need. And also, we already beat them 3-0 away. I think this is one that we absolutely just need to come out with a win. And to be honest, I feel like we just need to come out with a decent kind of comfortable win. And if we go and play Killy and we win 2-0, I think that will restore a bit more positivity. Because that's one you have to be winning. I think we will win, but I want to see a convincing win. I'd really like to see us kind of blow them away like we did with some teams early in the season.
Like we did with Killy.
Yeah, Killy.
Earlier in the season, to be fair.
You know, in fairness, there's not been that many games that we like hammered teams, but still,
yeah.
I do think we just need to go out and put a really good performance in, get a convincing win in that one. And it'll make a big difference because the fixtures coming up after that are obviously looking really difficult.
I think actually the best I've seen us play this season was that second half against Killy. They just played with such confidence. And I'm really hoping this will be the one that can get the ball rolling again. Because it's then away to Parkhead. Here's an interesting one, right? I think I'm just thinking about, it sounds, by all accounts and purposes, that it's been confirmed that Wilfried Nancy will be coming in for this weekend's game. There was some doubt about it, but it seems to be confirmed now. I would far rather take the gamble on him coming in and needing to try, and he's going to have very little time to work out what to do with his players. Obviously, you can just say carry on where you left off with O'Neill. But I would rather take the gamble of a new guy coming in than facing O'Neill's Celtic, who, you know, seem to be really galvanised at the moment. What's everyone else's thoughts?
Totally. Like, I totally agree with that. I think O'Neill's really brought some, like, passion and belief, and he's a really good man motivator. So I think the change in staff might help us if that's the way it goes with Celtic.
I was speaking to a Celtic fan the weekend. He was saying that he's quite apprehensive about it. He said it's obviously it could go either way, but he sort of referenced obviously Ange coming from Premier League. So he was like, hopefully he's like that. But he also said that some of the stuff that he's seen online about, like Nancy, the way he puts the teams, like puts the team out and things like that, and some of the tactics, he said he wasn't feeling too hopeful, which I hope is a good sign for us.
See, the thing is, if we so much as get a draw at Parkhead, the fans will start, the Celtic fans will start to be apprehensive about this. They're expecting us to get pretty soundly beaten. I imagine that's their feelings, that's what I've been reading online. Their confidence is up right now. If they get someone in who only manages to get a draw against us, I'm pretty certain that's going to be a big factor in increasing the tension amongst fans who aren't in a great place with the Celtic board anyway. John, what's your thoughts about that?
I know what you mean, like with the draw. I just feel like if we have any hope of really pushing them after the sort of poor form we've had over the last, I feel like it's not obviously a cinch win, but I just feel like it'd be so massive in the context of the whole season. You know, in such a short space of time, we've gone from, you know, hoping that we'd be in a title race to, I don't know you guys, but I'm now thinking, you know, could Rangers catch us, which is obviously worrying. But I don't know, I just feel like the way the football's been recently, the subs, the tactics, I don't know, I just don't see it getting better at the moment.
I have confidence in our January signings, I have to say. I think we will come out stronger. And I think you've heard people earlier on this season, media were saying Celtic just need, and Celtic fans were saying, why, we just need to get to the January window. I think we'll have a stronger January window than them. Maybe I'm being blindly optimistic here, but I think if we can just keep the points clocking up and we don't have too many bad results, you know, what have we got then? Let's just kind of cover what we've got. So obviously, Killy, Celtic, we know about those two. Then away to Falkirk. I think that'll be a tough one. We've also got Rangers at home. To me, I'm seeing that as a 3 points. I think that's easily one we can get 3 points in. Hibs is obviously a different matter altogether. We're playing Easter Road, but Hibs haven't exactly been in great form. It's worth keeping in mind, yeah, we only drew with Motherwell, but they lost quite convincingly to Motherwell in the same week with what I'd argue was actually probably slightly weaker.
They did all right with Celtic, though.
Yeah, I mean, they lost.
I think Trent is right, to be honest. I think Hibs actually were the better team. Genuinely, they had like 5-10 minute spell where they just, the goalkeeper made a mistake. Celtic scored, then poor defensively for the second one. Celtic also should have had a definite red, in my opinion. But of course, that gets ignored. I wouldn't say Hibs were like unbelievable or really that much of a threat going forward, but I thought, you know, probably over the whole piece, I think they were slightly better.
I think they're a solid team. Like, they're a consistent team.
So another positive defeat for them to add to their European ones as well.
We tried.
I just think on results wise, they're not. They haven't done anything amazing results wise.
Mm.
You know, they've dropped a lot of points against teams you think they might have beaten, and I wouldn't say they've got any kind of spectacular wins this season either. They lost to Rangers, lost to Celtic, lost to Hearts. So they're obviously a decent side, and they're capable of like decent results, but I don't think they haven't pulled off a great win this season yet, in my opinion.
And that's what this season is, though. That's what this season is. No one's running away with it. We're all blowing smoke out our arses about Hearts with our brilliant start, but this is a season of grinding out results.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, look at the way that Falkirk are going. That's not even a guaranteed easy victory, right? Yeah. The Old Firm, they're not quite right either. So there are no easy games. I don't think we're miles ahead of anyone, and I don't think anyone else is like miles behind us.
Mm-hmm. Anyone can beat anyone, I'd say, yeah. I mean, for me, the Falkirk away game is almost... I'm more worried about Falkirk away than I am about Rangers at home at the moment.
Same, actually.
Just because it's an away game, Falkirk are obviously doing really well. Mm-hmm. I actually feel, obviously the Kilmarnock game aside, I almost feel like, yeah, I think the game at home at Rangers is the one that we can be most confident about, almost, I would say.
That's mental to say that, isn't it?
Falkirk could easily have beaten Rangers at the weekend.
Yeah.
I thought Rangers got lucky at the end to actually, you know, to not lose that game.
I know they've
picked up a lot, so you know they've started winning games, but they're still not brilliant, and they're not very... there's not a lot of difference between like us and Rangers. I wouldn't say they're like ahead of us, that's for sure.
Definitely not.
The whole league's quite tight, to be fair. I was speaking to a guy from work who's a Dundee United fan, and obviously I didn't think they'd had the worst start. I thought they'd, you know, played all right against us in both games, but he was saying to me like he's genuinely worried that they'll be in a relegation fight this season.
That's interesting, yeah.
Said they've been awful, obviously, apart from the game against us at Tyne. He said the rest of their games have been horrendous.
Do we think that our start to the season, right, just like checking the pulse of other Jambos, do we think that that's because we were amazing or because Celtic and Rangers were shit at the start of the season? Because I think it's down to the Old Firm being shit. Just as much, I'm not saying that we haven't been, you know, really good going start of the season, but, you know, everyone's talking about the bubble bursting and stuff. I don't think, if I'm honest, that we look like a title-winning team. I think that we were positioned that way because of the shortcomings of the Old Firm.
I know what you mean, and I think it's maybe a mix of both, but if you look at some of the results we had at the start, like the Dundee United game, you know, regardless of what Celtic or Rangers did, we still had the character to win that game in the last minute. Motherwell coming back from 3-0 down, we still, like, the team have still had to do that.
Yeah, we had to do that. We weren't good enough to have done that within the, you know, like, we had to come back and do that.
Yeah, but Celtic... in a standard season, Celtic and Rangers will have to do that, and we'll grind out results with last minute winners. The point is, like, we were getting, aside from the Old Firm, we're still very good, and we were showing a lot of character to get last minute goals to come back from 3-0 down. So I think, like John said, it's a combination of, I think them not doing well boosted how we looked overall, but I do think our results overall were also excellent.
I think as well, like, we beat them both quite comfortably, and I know that's obviously, again, factor they weren't great, but think about like Hearts teams in the past, you know, going to Ibrox, didn't matter how bad they were, the chance of us coming away with a 2-0 win is so low.
Mm-hmm.
The number of times the Rangers have looked rubbish and we've gone and just lost, like, always, like, you know, no matter how bad we are, we always go there and lose. So it was a huge difference to actually go and beat them at Ibrox. It almost never happened to us.
The Celtic one at Tyne as well wasn't, obviously they're missing some players, but they still have a decent squad. And I thought, like, it's the one time really I think I've watched the game against them where I felt, you know, pretty comfortable. Like, they didn't look like they were going to score. We played better. We took our chances.
Mm-hmm. I think this kind of actually brings me quite nicely to my final point that I was making. It's just one thing that seems to have gone in recent games is just that desire to win at, you know, in the dying few minutes, particularly. I mentioned earlier, John, the comparison to even just the St Mirren game where, yeah, we didn't end up winning it, we ended up drawing it, but we were ending up on top and you really thought if we carried on playing, we would have won. Whereas the Motherwell game, yeah, we didn't lose it, but if things had carried on, we would have fully expected us to lose it. So I think that's kind of one of the main issues, that's really our last minute goals have dried up. And, you know, I guess, where is this coming from? Is it just confidence? Is it the system we're playing? Is it all the other things I've mentioned? Yeah. Over to you, John. Answer that one for us.
Yeah, honestly, the only thing I can really say is that I think the League Cup game against St Mirren and that League One psychologically have had a massive effect on the squad. Obviously, it's not just one game, but I feel like that second game against Mirren, it's like the players almost realised that they've been found out. They realised they couldn't beat them. And like, I don't know if that's maybe just like not the confidence. They've gone, okay, maybe we aren't, you know, able to do this continuously. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can't. Maybe if a team has found us out, we've got no answer. And then obviously some of the other games, you know, we've struggled to break down teams since then. Like, something's missing. And obviously some players have been off form, but I don't know. I feel like it's almost like something stemmed from that St Mirren game or the way St Mirren played against us.
I think another one sort of end and sort of a kind of positive note here is that, you know, you can ask people, can ask Hearts fans, would they take our position now at the start of the season? Of course, it's like a non-question. Of course we would. Kind of turn it around a wee bit. Would Celtic take their current position at the start of season, even knowing that they're kind of on the ascendancy and we're struggling to pick up? I think it'd be a definitive no.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how bad they are. They're always going to expect to be walking it. So I think you're absolutely right. I don't think not one of their fans would have taken that. Yeah. Unless maybe it was to get more abuse at their board, but who knows.
But was that a reality thing or was that a pride thing? You know, like, were they expecting the squad they had, the manager they had, to run away with the league like they so often do?
It's all they've ever known, isn't it? Like, yeah. Fans, it's understandable if they've, you know, been so used to year on year. I guess they kind of just, every year must be the same. Oh, well, we'll win the league again.
I think it's kind of playing out at the moment in their head, the way they expect it to play out. We'll be top come December. I think there's obviously a really decent chance it will be. I maintain our current objective this season is still to split the old firm. Anything beyond that is obviously going to be amazing, but that should be the key target for this season. Yeah. But I just think if we're able to do something, just if we can try and regain our consistency, and if they drop points, they're going to drop points at some point, especially with someone new coming in. He's going to try implementing a whole new system. Then, you know, a chance for them to get a bit rattled, and who's to say what happens from there? I think there's still plenty of reasons to be positive. And I think a midweek win against Killy would be the perfect way to kickstart that, to be honest.
I think we just need to match the results for a little bit as well. Like, we've had this bad spell. If we can just match, say, even like 2 or 3 games in a row, just get a bit of momentum back. Whatever they do, we'll do it too. Or better. It's not going to be easy, obviously, but I mean, the Parkhead one, you know, we just can't afford to crumble. But easier said than done.
Before we go to Loan Watch and their quizzes, just want to mention cup draw was made yesterday. Falkirk at home. Look, obviously the Old Firm got the fucking piss easy games as per usual. I think I was just pretty happy to get a home tie. It's so rare that we seem to get the home ties to be played in the weekend of 17th of January. How's everyone feeling about that? Not the easiest, but at least it's at home.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how many midfielders we've got left at that point, seeing as Devlin suspended.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, you missed my midfield rant, John.
I just like, who's honestly, because let's be honest, when Benny's out for a couple of weeks, that means months. Newnhoff's permanently injured, as you will probably come back and get injured another five times. It could literally just be like, we've got McEntee and Magnussen.
Well, we've covered this in great length, John. Go back and re-listen to this episode.
I'd give Falkirk at home maybe a 7 out of 10 in terms of how happy I feel about it.
7 out of 10, that'll do. Like,
you know, it's the main thing is we're at home. We avoided the Old Firm. I think it's a decent enough draw.
John, do you want to bring us the Loan Watch then?
Right. So, Dander played 86 minutes. Dundee beat Mirren 3-1.
Where was he playing? Because I've seen he's playing as like a left wing back.
I think it was more sort of like he's playing sort of left centre midfield, but also kind of
bring him home. Him.
I don't know. Yeah, hopefully he does. Hopefully he does the favour on Wednesday against Celtic. That'd be good.
Yeah, actually, didn't he have a shot that like kind of ended up being like an own goal? Or what was it? He set up one of the goals.
So he had a shot, and the defenders like turned it in or something like that. Or yeah, led the goal.
Yeah, but still, don't bring him home. That's for sure.
I don't know, man. We're fucking short there. Like,
and that was shit.
I know, but. I still think there's a player there, but and sorry.
There is a player there, just not a Hearts player.
Which just might never see it.
it's a Wraith Rovers player.
Bring back Barry McKay as well, right?
Joe Scott had him in his best starting 11 of the century, or last 10 years, or whatever it was, so you never know. Has he got a player? Has he got a club? Are we doing Barry McKay watch after this?
He's not got a club.
Oh, right, okay.
We should get him on the pod.
I've got nothing else to do.
Where are you?
Macaulay Tate played 85 minutes. Livy lost 1-0 to Aberdeen, but getting some good minutes for him there. So he's getting back to the team.
Macaulay round here.
Bobby McLuckie got 24 minutes. Hamlin got hammered by Airdrie 4-0. So. What can you say? Hamlin are a bit of a mess. Next one was Montrose beating Benburb 3-0. Which sounds like a made-up name, but Sandlin's played 86 minutes and got an assist. So that's a goal and assist in the last two games for him, so seems to be hitting a bit of form. And Stevenson played 15 minutes. Still getting a few minutes here and there. Kenzie Nair. Spartans beat Bonnyrigg 2-1. He played the full 90 again, so I think that's like 5 or 6 in a row, so definitely looking up for him. Stranraer beat Clydebank 2-1. Plank and Gillies were obviously meant to play, but Plank played 103 minutes because he went to extra time, and Gillies wasn't even in the squad for some reason. I'm not sure that sort of relates to the next one as well with Forrester. Obviously, Hearts said they didn't want him to play. So I don't know if there's maybe a plan to recall him or just in case of injuries for us before January.
What a
it might be to sell him as well.
Potentially. But I wonder if maybe it's the same with Gillies, if maybe there's a plan to recall him and send him elsewhere, or as you said, sell him. Gonna go to McFarlane next. Played the full 90. They lost Allo lost 1-0 to Rafe. Again, he's obviously starting goalkeeper for them. And then finally a bit of good news about Vargas. He played and he scored a goal.
Well, hey.
And I actually saw the goal and I realised he's wearing number 51. So finally something good to say about him.
He's not.
Yes, he's wearing 51.
He hasn't earned that, the twat.
That could be the big turning point in the season, you know?
Yeah, get Vargas.
So it's because we're missing that pace, isn't it? That's the problem.
Guys, can we just talk about how weird that is, though? Because he's clearly, I don't know, he seemed not arsed. So I don't know if it's that's got to be a reference, right? Like he's got a, if he's wearing a 51.
Yeah.
The only thing maybe is like, it maybe means something over there, like something from Costa Rica or something to do with that club, but it seems too coincidental.
Okay, so this week it's Adam and John's turn to do the quizzes. Adam is currently thumbing his way through the Hearts quiz book. And after that, John will be doing connect your two former or indeed current Hearts players with a team they both played for. Adam, do you want to kick us off?
Right, we're going to go for round six, Hearts against the Wii team.
Okay.
So we've got another 11 questions. How many derby matches did Hearts win in season 2013-14?
Three.
Yeah, I know it's right. I have gone to the wrong answer page. Oh, no, it's not. Actually, no.
Oh, shoot.
Who
wins the draw, maybe?
Nah.
Wait, what season was it? 2013-14?
Yeah.
That's right. Ah, so that's one before.
Win, draw, loss?
We won 4 out of 5.
Oof.
Who captained Hearts to a 3-1 victory against Hibs in the 1896 Scottish Cup final?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Barney Battles?
No, at least it's a player.
Yes!
Bonus points for actual player.
Tommy someone. It's always Tommy someone.
Nah, mine was off. John?
Martin James.
George Hogg. They get easier. Paul Hartley memorably scored a hat-trick against Hibs in the 4-0 Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden Park in 2006. Who scored Hearts' only other goal that day?
Like Jankowskis or something like that?
Yes. Finally, someone gets a point. John's in the lead on one.
I just could not think that was the right name. I was like, I don't want to say it, and it's completely wrong.
In January 2009, Hearts knocked Hibs out of the Scottish Cup with a 2-0 victory at Easter Road. Which two players scored their only Scottish Cup goals for Hearts that day?
What year?
2009.
I've got a guess, but I don't know if it was a cup or not.
It was a cup, yeah.
No, I mean like their goals. The game I'm thinking of, I don't know if it was the cup game or not, but was it Abua and Santana? Suzo, obviously.
No. Was that not maybe a little later? I'm not sure. It might have been that kind of time. Anyway, no, it wasn't that one.
Hey, Nadi.
Yes.
Yeah. Remember? I can't remember the other one, though.
You get half a point. Like, Gary Glenn was the other.
Mm-hmm.
How was that back again? This is going so at the moment John's on one, Jamie's on half a point, and Bunter's on 0.
No, I'm on half a point for knowing an old Hearts player.
It was the wrong answer. You get a quarter of a point for that. So
perfect.
What was the score in the first derby match between Hearts and Hibs?
It was 1-0 Hearts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes!
1875. Hearts played with only 8 men for the first 20 minutes.
Bloody hell.
So, which player
played a 1-2 with Neil Janicic before slotting the ball into the Hearts net in the 90th minute to complete a late comeback from a goal down to win 2-1 at Easter Road in November 2002.
Is that like Stamp or something?
Yes, Phil Stamp. John was about 2 years old, 3 years old at that point. But
it's one of those goals that always comes up when people read.
Yeah, that's goals really fair. Yeah, Neil Janicic.
We John in the ultras section at 2 years old, man. Jesus Christ.
That's when Neil Janicic came on and everyone, Hibs fans, sung "Who the fucking hell are you?" And he set up both goals, McKenna and Stamp. All right. What nickname did Hibs fans give to the day in April 2014 when Hibs came to Tynecastle intending to be the team that relegated Hearts, only to suffer a 2-0 defeat themselves?
Relegation party.
Yeah. That's what I thought, but it's a different one here.
Really? Because that was, I remember...
Tesco day or something?
No, good guess, though.
No, is that not what they said, though? Like, it's going to be a Tesco.
Yeah, I'll give you a clue. It's a band.
Shit.
Band clues have not worked well so far.
No.
Fleetwood Mac? No, it's not that.
We proclaim you're going down.
Well, John, you're not a dad yet.
There you go. Does anyone else remember that?
No.
No, but I was going out with a Hibs season ticket holder at the time, and she was in a Facebook group about Hearts getting relegated. And then, is that the year that they got relegated by Hamon Akis? Same one?
Yeah.
Yes. Fuck me, that was the best year of my life.
What was significant about Hearts' 2-1 victory over Hibs at Tynecastle on 1st of April 1989?
Was it the 100th Derby win?
What, sorry?
Was it the 100th Derby win?
No, wrong.
Was it? Good guess, but that's wrong. So, like, this 22nd game of the 22 unbeaten run.
I'll give you half a point.
The first game of the unbeaten.
Yeah, I'll give you both half a point because I feel like John set it up. On 21st of May 2000, Hearts clinched their place in Europe by beating Hibs 2-1 at Tynecastle. Which player scored the winning goal?
See you again, sorry.
21st of May 2000.
Phil Stamp.
No.
Barney Battles.
Quarter of a point. John, you were not even one at this point.
I said Mark De Vries, but I don't think it's right.
Ah, Guy McSwiggan. This is not going so well, this one. After losing 3-2 to Hibs in a Boxing Day... after losing 3-2 to Hearts in a Boxing Day match, the Hibs manager infamously accused Hearts of being a pub team. The words were pinned up in the Hearts dressing room as motivation before the next Derby match, and Hearts duly won 1-0 at Easter Road. Who was the offending Hibs manager?
Miksu Patalainen?
Nope.
See you again?
It doesn't say the year. It can't have been that far off that kind of era, though.
Can't say my knowledge of Hibs managers is that great, to be honest.
No, mine either. But this is the best quiz we've had, by the way.
I'm gonna say his name just because he's an icon for us, Pat Fenlon.
No, it was John Collins.
He lives right by me.
Tell him he's
about it next time you see him.
I kicked up. Mind, I put in the group chat. I kicked a fork at him by mistake a couple months ago.
That was the next quiz question, actually. You ruined that one. I'll make up another one instead. So, how many goals did John Robertson score against Hibs?
27.
Right with it. 3.5 points. Trunter 1.25 points. Jamie 1.
Look at Jamie.
Jamie is relegated.
Boom.
So two players are Connor Salmon and Ryan Stevenson.
Wraith Rovers.
It's not the one I've got, but maybe.
Are you United? Yeah.
Nope.
Falkirk. Dunfermline.
Nope. It's an English team.
It's an English team, all right. Yeah, of course he would have got. Did he play for Wigan at some point?
Yeah.
Even someone to Ipswich, right?
Ipswich, yeah.
Yeah, he Ipswich went back to us like the same season. I've no idea about Connor Salmon, but yeah.
He just randomly popped into my head. I was like, I'll just pick him and then find the club.
I remember we used to sing, you know, when it was like that chant, Dead is on fire. So it's like, you know, Connor Salmon's on fire. Your defence is terrified. Honestly, he could have like vomiting killer bees, chainsaws attached to both his arms, and no defence would still be terrified of Connor Salmon in a heart strip.
Feed the fish and he will score.
Indeed. Well, he didn't get fed very well or very often. Right. That is it for this week, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Please do join us before our next episode on our socials, and you can find us on Instagram, on Twitter, or X, as it's called these days, as well as Blue Sky. Thank you very much. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.